From our family to your family, this is A Legacy of Faith, the podcast. Welcome to A Legacy of Faith, the podcast designed to help your family survive the day, plan for tomorrow, and always keep an eye on eternity. We're glad you joined us for the 145th episode of the podcast. And Leah, right from the outset, I'm going to ask you if you still feel good about your Super Bowl pick.
I don't think I can remember who my Super Bowl pick was.
Well, you made two. You first chose the Indianapolis Colts, and I kind of looked at you and went, no, that's not what I mean. Although they did make
the
point.
Then I said the Packers.
Yeah. They're in the Final Four.
Really? Yeah, well, that's what I meant the first time.
That's in college basketball. They are in a title game, conference title game this weekend. So still feeling good about Aaron Rodgers and the Packers?
Sure.
Debbie, yeah. I know who they play this weekend.
No.
That's what I figured. They're playing against some quarterback named Tom Brady. But the Packers are favored to win. They're at home. So I was thinking as we were getting ready to record, I was actually thinking this morning, thinking about kind of how to kick off this podcast and, that people should take their NFL advice from you and their college basketball advice from me. Your pick to win the national championship in college basketball was?
Duke.
Yeah, who's awful. Mine was Gonzaga, who has yet to lose and has only played one close game all season. So, just saying. It's January 22nd as this is being released. Yeah, and you probably won't understand this because you don't follow this as closely as I do, I know, but there's still a lot of the college basketball season left, and Gonzaga already has an over 50% chance to enter the tournament undefeated. That's unheard of at this point in the season. They are burying people. Their games aren't even fun to watch. Duke, on the other hand, their games are fun to watch because they're close. They always lose, but they're close. So. Sigh. As a Duke fan, that's very, very difficult to stomach.
I was hoping Duke would win.
Yeah, they're not good. Oh, well. It's sports. Anyway, it's the way it works. So, this is episode 145, and we are involved in a little three-part series we began last time. So, if you didn't go back and listen to the gross episode, episode 144, you might want to do that. But we mentioned last time that you shared a list a long time ago on Facebook, a couple months ago or so, and we decided to just kind of take the list and develop into three episodes. And we're calling this list how to raise secular children, because that's what the list is. It gives three things. We're reading them each episode. We're trying to focus on just one of the three on each episode. So here are the three.
Of course, ours is that's not what we want to do.
Exactly. So yeah, we're taking the ironic.
You don't care if your kids turn out secularly minded, then do these things.
Yeah, we're just kind of taking the ironic title however you want to think of it that way. So last time on episode 144. We talked about fitting church into your schedule whenever it's convenient. The one we'll talk about next time, Lord willing, the third one is give higher priority to school and sports activities and church involvement. So on this episode, almost said tonight, here in prime time on the podcast, on this episode, 145, the second thing on the list is this, and we mentioned last time these overlap somewhat, we understand that, but this one is listed this way: devalue the message by living a church life and a different home life. Now, when I read that, I thought, I get what they're saying. There's probably a better way of wording that, but they're going for the fewest words possible. But hopefully, we understand what they mean when they say that. Basically, where you have we're really righteous, we're really faithful, we love the Bible, we love God, we love, church hymns and all that stuff on Sunday morning, but then things are way different the other 6.5 days of the week or 6 days of the week or, that's the way I take it. Right. It's just the inconsistency. But where I want us to begin, really, is them using the word the message. Devalue the message by living a church life and a different home life. And I really appreciate, I don't know who wrote this list. That's one you just kind of found and shared real quick. So I don't know who wrote it, but I really like that choice of words. Devalue the message. Because they're talking there, I think, about as parents, your example. They're also thinking about the example you live just out before the world. Christianity is something that we share by example. It becomes a message in and of itself in a lot of ways. And so I just like the way they worded that, to devalue the message by doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, it in the simplest form is just the message of your faith, or what the message your kids might be learning at church. You devalue it if you're not living that in your home life. Because mm-hmm. it's like, well, that's what we hear at church, but that's no big deal at home.
Right. So it's the message they might hear, you know, the preacher say, or, you know, the Bible class teacher say, but also a lot of times the message that we kind of say we believe when we're at mm-hmm. church, you know, we sing all the songs and mm-hmm. we amen the prayer, and, you know, we go to Bible class, maybe raise our hand and answer a question here or there, but then we come home and it's a very different message. So let's just get into the fact that it talks specifically here about living a church life and then a different home life. Now, we can go pretty well countless different directions of this if we wanted to. So I'm going to let you choose direction one here. What is kind of a sadly common way that a family, or especially parents, do that, where they say one thing at church or live one message at church and then live a different message just, and I like that generic you put there, in their home life?
I don't know. Well, this may be too generic. If you want more specific, just say so. But
we got time.
I was thinking of, morally speaking, like a child maybe sits in during a sermon and he hears the preacher preach about, you know, whatever moral issue. But then at home, you either engage in that more, you know, immoral activity that goes against what they've heard at church mm-hmm. or in their Bible class, or maybe, you know, you're watching something on TV, like you hear at church that this is really wrong, but then here we are being entertained by it at right. home. Or, you know, I'm thinking of things like that seems inconsistent to kids, and they pick up on that.
That's where my mind went first too. Like you said, it's kind of a general direction of, you know, the preacher or the elders get up and make announcement, you know, that we've got a situation in the congregation, or this, we feel this is a threat in our community, or, you know, whatever the situation, like you said, maybe a Bible class teacher gets up and teaches on something specific, and we sit there and listen and maybe read all the verses right along and everything, and then we come home and act as if that lesson never happened.
Right.
And I really appreciate you saying that about, even, you know, sometimes we entertain ourselves with the same stuff at church. We go, oh, that's horrible. I can't believe anybody would ever live that way. And then we come home and laugh about it.
Right.
Or it's a big part of the plot line of, you know, a movie that we're entertained by on a Friday night or whatever it happens to be. And I appreciate you saying that. Kids pick up on that. They may not, especially at very younger ages, they may not necessarily say anything, but they notice. Let me restart that. They may not understand every word the preacher says on Sunday morning when he preaches against whatever, foul language. I'll just use a very generic example here. They may not understand everything he says in the sermon, but they know what he's talking about. And they also see that, okay, at home, we either do that, you know, daddy lets out a few words every so often, or we watch shows where that's going on all the time. And they begin to wonder which one's real here, which one's
right.
the real authority here.
They don't go together. So it stands to reason that for most kids, their biggest influence, you know, is their parents. And so it would stand to reason that if they had to make a choice on which one is really the truth in life, it would be the way they're living at home, or what they're engaging in when they're not at church, that would start to really train their mind. So if it is two different sets of standards, or two different, you know, morality, two different sides of a morality issue, then yes, I think we always like to think that maybe a morning at church, a Bible class once or twice a week even, is going to set our kids on the right path toward their spiritual life. But I've heard this over and over, and it's really so true. It's just not enough. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be enough. And sometimes parents, you know, it goes along with maybe some of the things we talked about in the last episode, but
we said these are going to overlap.
Yeah, if you really think that you don't really have to do anything for your kid's spiritual life, that's just going to not work out for you. You know,
right.
You really have to make it a home issue, like a home life. Like, you need to talk about, I'm probably getting ahead, but talk about those things that you've heard and we're saying they hear it at church, and we're assuming that what they've heard at church is scriptural, mm-hmm. not just any random thought that a preacher throws out there. Right. I mean, we're assuming people understand that we need to check all that we hear in sermons by the Bible itself and make sure we're hearing the truth preached in Bible classes and all of that. But, you know, we're assuming that. But if they're hearing that at church and then you're not supplementing that or engaging in conversations about those topics and putting it into real life for them at home, then to them it's just a little activity. Mm-hmm. And probably, for a lot of kids, not their most fun activity.
Well, or the only thing they enjoy about it is the fact they see some friends. They don't
right.
Really,
so
don't really
it's not really going to... It's going to be more of a social thing that they can go and participate in, but it's not really affecting their life. Like, it's not really, you know, changing anything about their worldview because it's just a thing they do once or twice a week. But it doesn't have anything to do with real life to them. You know, that's what it could turn into if you're not making it a part of your everyday life.
Right. And, you know, all of these are going to overlap to some degree, the things we're going to say, you know, ways this can happen. But as you were talking, one of the things I thought about is one of the things we say and hear a lot in sermons, we sing about it a lot, is that God comes first. You know, God's mm-hmm. the most important thing. We're going to say that 1,000 different ways, you know, over the course of a few weeks, basically, at worship mm-hmm. services. And then we come home, and God's never mentioned. Or the Bible's never opened, or Bibles, even like Bible books, you know, are never opened. But we go to church, and God... And what I think what that does to a lot of children and young people is it teaches them that God is first when we're in the church building.
Right.
And then we undervalue, or to use their word, devalue the message when we come mm-hmm. home, that God isn't first here. God's not even on the list.
That's
here.
It's just a church thing, or it's just a Sunday thing. And I think we can subtly do this as parents, and you know, sadly, I think I've seen that, well, I know I've seen this happen before, that you might hear a sermon or there might be a Bible class on a certain topic that maybe is one of those that's just really hard to swallow. Mm-hmm. Maybe it goes against the grain of culture that, you know, and you've got, you know, a youth minister or a preacher standing up and trying to convince people in this, you know, whatever it might be. I'm not even going to get specific, but that there might be something that really and truly most people are participating in, and it because it's really popular, whatever it might be, or maybe all the, you know, a lot of kids might be involved in, you know, this activity or that activity or this kind of behavior. But then he stands up and makes a big deal about this is how we need to live as Christians, and he could be even, you know, trying to show from Scripture, hopefully, what he is saying is not just his opinion, but it's from God. But then if you go home and all your kids are hearing is that, you know, they hear their parents, you know, talking about how they don't agree with that, well, who are they really going to listen to? Mm-hmm. Most kids are going to be hearing their parents say, well, I don't agree with that. So then there again, you go back to this distorted view of, you know, our life in our family doesn't match up to what I'm hearing at church. And eventually your kid will just grow out of that. They're not going to be fooled to think, why would they keep going to church if they're not going to agree with what's there? And we can do that sometimes just subtly because we don't want to address an issue in our family, maybe something our family participates in or behaviors that we've excused. And then all of a sudden when we, you know, someone steps on our toes, instead of being humble and trying to talk to our family and our kids about, here's some changes we feel like we need to make. We know this is hurting. I've seen families do that, like change courses.
If I can just cut you off, or even be willing to say, okay, we heard this sermon this morning. We're going to study that further. Even going that far is
because
huge.
See, even that shows that to the kid, your parents are really concerned about what the Bible says, not
go
just
ahead,
what man. They think. Well, I mean, that's exactly what I would needed to say, too. So I just feel like we can do these things even we don't understand the ramifications sometimes of constantly pushing back at a hard lesson or a hard doctrine. And there are those in the Bible. I mean, most of us can agree that, oh, we need to be kind to one another. Most parents are going to want to teach their kids that. You know, be nice, be a good friend. You know, don't murder, you know, I mean, don't do drugs, you know, just, you know, but then there are these things that are just, they step on our toes as far as...
Well, they don't seem like as big of a deal as some other things. You know, like, don't kill is one thing.
Right.
Don't hate is a very different thing. You know, that's a whole lot harder. Yeah. And there's a lot of other examples we could use. But it's the things that may not seem like as big of a deal, or they're not as outward. You know, I don't mind somebody telling my kids not to kill anybody. Sure, they need to hear that. It's true. But, okay, how about using foul language or euphemisms and stuff?
Right.
Well, you know, that's just different. No, it's not different. I mean, it's a different action.
I mean, we could talk about specifics for a long time.
But you know, I want to use that one because it seems like it's just not as big of a deal. Well, yeah, sure, somebody's not dead because I used a foul word, but it's still wrong.
Yeah.
And it's still, you know, it's still a matter of the heart that really matters.
And I'm having, in my mind, just very popular behaviors that maybe our kids can get, you know, wrapped up in, that if you're not being careful, you know, that's maybe what they're learning from their friends, or, you know, maybe it's music, whatever it could be. It could be a lot of things that all of a sudden they feel like at church this would be wrong. You know, people use that kind of language all of the time, you know, like, well, I can't lie in church. We're in, you know, and it's like, I know a lot of times people are just kidding and everything, but
Sometimes
people really feel that way. Like, this is, and we ought to feel that way, I guess, when we're worshiping. And, you know, we know the church is just a building, but the church building is just a building. But, you know, we just need to remember that whatever our kids are, and if we're hearing things that aren't true from preachers, then we need to address that.
Right.
That's
a related but a different topic.
We're assuming what they hear at church is actually what the Bible teaches about a topic.
Right.
Like if the Bible says dress modestly, or, you know, don't use foul language and all those things, then yes, we need to be making sure that that's what we're doing in our family, instead of saying, well, that's not that big a deal to me.
Right. So. Yeah. Another thing I thought of along these lines, and again, these overlap to some degree, but I think we can devalue the message when, let's just kind of piggyback off what you said. Something's taught or said that either steps on our toes or is somewhat controversial, or maybe we just haven't thought about a particular matter in a certain way, and that's fine. I mean, there are times somebody's going to teach something, preach something, you thought, you know, I've never really considered that passage that way, or I've never really realized the Bible addressed that topic. That's fine. That's going to happen. But then how we speak about the elders, the Bible class teacher, the preacher, whoever it is that taught that, is huge.
Mm-hmm.
We can devalue the message by devaluing the messenger.
Right.
And make it to where
exactly
the elders are just dumb or out of touch, or the preacher is just foolish or mean,
mm-hmm,
you know, mean-spirited, or the Bible class teacher has an axe to grind, and just talk that way, maybe very subtly,
mm-hmm,
but where, okay, this person is standing up as, you know, quote unquote, an authority figure, you know, as a Bible class teacher or preacher or the elders or whomever it happens to be. But if we're continuing just saying in subtle ways, what they say really doesn't apply to me, or I don't like what they say, or they're just mean.
What do you think is going to happen with your kid?
Right. And what do we think is going to happen to the kids, not just to that preacher or those elders, but one of these days they move off. You know, and maybe they keep going to church, but are they really going to listen to the elders? No.
Right. And would they?
Or like you said, are they going to make sure that that preacher, those elders, are biblical, or is it just, hey, they're cool, or they're nice, or they don't hurt my feelings?
Right.
That's going to be all that matters.
Right.
That's not all that matters. It's, are they saying the truth? The truth in love, yes, but are they saying the truth?
And, you know, beyond that, even would they ever even? Let's just say you're not really disagreeing with anything. This probably is getting off topic, but let's just say you don't even really disagree with what the message is or what they've heard at church, but you're, what do you say, devaluing the messenger because
mm-hmm,
you're talking bad or you're making fun of. And would we wonder why in the world then our you know, children don't want to grow up and be leaders in the church,
mm-hmm,
and just want to sit back on the sidelines, whether... You know,
church leadership is really important, but we're going to make fun of it.
Right, we're going to make fun of it. So who, you know, a lot of times we've talked about that, or at least I've thought about it, when we look for elders or deacons in the church, and you have these men who just say, well, you know, we all know that you don't, obviously that's the qualification, you need to desire,
mm-hmm,
the office. But if you've talked about these people all your life, and then this Or if you have done that, and then all of a sudden someone says, you know, we really need strong leadership in the church. Would you be willing? Why would you want to do that? Yeah. Or why would your children grow up and never want to do that if all they've heard is, that's just dumb, you know, that's crazy. They don't understand. And so it's really, it's related. We get off topic.
It is. Well, and, you know, as a preacher and you as a preacher's wife, and we understand, you know, people are going to say things to me kiddingly, you know, about the length of a sermon or, you know, messing up a reference. So that's it's fine. It's you know, we're not saying you can never have a laugh, you know, or kid with the preacher, even kid with the elders or whatever. But if your kids are hearing that constantly, even if you're kidding, but they hear that all the time. You know, every time the elders make some announcement, you've got to go give some little funny statement about it. Your kids are going to notice that.
Disrespect.
You know, you know, it's okay every once in a while. If it's constant, it's like, do we really appreciate them? Or are we just kidding? Are they just kidding? Because everything seems to be funny when they make an announcement. And so, you know, we can devalue the message of, like you said, just respect. You know, respect for authority, respect for leadership by just, you know, by things that may be innocent. We may be doing something innocently, but if it's just constant, our kids are picking up on, I guess when this deacon makes announcements, it's funny. Well, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. But we continually make fun of him or, oh, yeah, you messed that name up again, didn't you? Well, so what? Or whatever it happens to be. We got to be really careful about those subtle things.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those, you know, it said we did this at home. Let's be honest. I sometimes say in sermons, you know, some people's favorite Sunday dinner is roasted elder and fried preacher. You know, that seems to be really common is, you know, let's go home in the car or at the restaurant or sitting around the dining room table at lunch or whatever. Let's pick apart the service instead of what did we learn today? Or what we you know, study in Bible class? And what song did you enjoy today? You know, instead of that, it's let's pick it up. Let's be the color commentator and pick it apart instead of talking about how we grew and learned and came closer to God.
Right. And I think this kind of relates. This is one of those that will overlap a little bit, but I think we can devalue the message and with the what from what we have, you know, the church, the message at church, and then how it is different from our home life. Also, is if we never really get engaged with the congregation. We've talked about that last week. I think probably
it'll come up next time too.
Our next last episode
needs to mention here too.
And but then you know probably we'll talk about it on the next.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
But it's true that if you're never engaged with that congregation, if you just go and sit on the pew, even if the kid is hearing messages, and even if you're not disagreeing with anything, but if that's all you're doing, then the message of the church and unity is going to be lost on them because they're not really part of that body. They're not really a part of things, and they're going to feel that. You know, you have to work on that as they grow and make them feel a part of the church and the congregation for the message really to mean something to them.
Well, part of the message is this is a family, right. This is a body, this, you know, all these.
And you hear that,
pictures.
But then we're never there. We barely know, you know, we barely do anything, and we certainly never volunteer. We don't, you know, well, there could be a lot of reasons that people don't do that, but that's going to end up hurting your kids because they're never going to feel like this is for them. That we're just spectators here. We don't really belong. We don't fit in.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it's going to come up in the next episode,
right.
too. It kind of fits everything, each of the three areas, I should say, for sure. So you know, there's a lot of ways to do this, and we're kind of just thinking through some negatives. Let's turn this to some positives instead of just hammering away at families. And some of these are going to be really obvious, but what are some just – let's kind of go through some ages here. Okay, you've got little kids. You know, let's say – preschool, early elementary age kids, you know, they're still learning about, you know, the routine, you know, church is something we go to on Sunday and I go to my Bible class and, you know, I learn about Jesus and that's wonderful. But when they come home, what are some ways that we can make sure that we are, what's a good word, reaffirming the message instead of devaluing the message for a family with little kids or that has at least a little kid?
One thing I think I wrote a blog post about this a long time ago.
Wow.
And when our kids were very small, and I didn't do it as faithfully, and we didn't do it very long, but once went on the in the early years of homeschooling in their first year or two, had all of these little Bible class papers coming into the house, a little craft that they had made. And I started deciding, of course, I did this before then. This was just a dedicated, specific time. But I took those things, and even a part of our school, we would sit and review their Bible classes with mm-hmm. their own little coloring sheet or mm-hmm. little craft or whatever that they had made. And you could do that even, if you don't homeschool.
Like, but just not devotional.
You could, you know, put a magnet and hang it on the refrigerator, and then while you're eating, talk about right. that class on a Tuesday night. Don't reserve it just for the car ride home. But
one of the things we talk about when we do our parenting seminars, sometimes I'm asked to do a class on family devotionals. And that's one of the things I talk about is, you know, sometimes parents say, we don't know where to start. And I say, use their Bible school stuff, right. especially if you got little kids, because they're probably coming out with a coloring yeah. sheet or a word search or whatever. And by Tuesday or Thursday night, it's not that they've forgotten it, but they don't remember right. everything about it. So just use it to retell the story or
ask them about
it. Ask them a few questions right. about it. It's a great place to start.
Mm-hmm. And then if you do that, see, that brings the church message home mm-hmm. and the kids know that that's important to you and that you're expecting them to listen in class and that this is, you know, not just a we're done with it, check it off our list and move on with our week. This is something that's still going to be part of our family, and that's simple. That's a simple thing when they're little. It's just hang that whatever it is. And even if I know, like, Bible class is going to be different, most churches are gonna come out with a little Bible class activity sheet or whatever, mm-hmm. and you can at least take it. Or if not, just ask your kid's teacher, you know, what are you learning about this week? And
right.
And that's encouraging for a Bible school teacher to know someone
a parent cares. Yeah.
So that would be one easy.
That's a really good thing. So, all right, let's step up a little bit. Let's just say kind of upper elementary, maybe in the tween years, you know, when the kids are starting to learn more about the Bible on their own besides just the quote-unquote basic stories. You know, they're starting to go to Bible classes. Maybe they're getting some conceptual stuff, but they're also getting busier with Little League school activities, and this is going to be next time's lesson, more that thing. But what can a family do to make sure not undermining the message with a child who's in that, you know, let's just say maybe like 8 to 12, something like that age group, where they're starting to kind of really build some level of biblical knowledge of their own besides just the super basics?
Maybe making sure that they're not sometimes at that age they start having more assignments. Maybe they have a little assignment, or I know a long time ago was one curriculum you had to fill it out before church and everything. I can't remember. I remember doing that when I was younger, but making sure that they weren't supposed to read a passage to mm-hmm. prepare. You know, I just constantly be checking to make sure of that. That would be one thing. But I think similarly to what I said earlier, but just asking what they've learned about mm-hmm. and discussing it. At that age, you're going to be able to just talk with them more. They're going to remember, or maybe even just talking about things, even if they don't remember at first, and you're like, well, that was worth nothing. They didn't remember a thing. But if you keep doing that, they're going to know, Mom and Dad expect me right. to be remembering this when I come home, so that's important to them. Right. That's a huge lesson, just that. Just knowing that they understand that you expect them to listen and pay attention right. in class.
I'll mention one at that age, and I say it this age because I think a lot of parents, Christian parents, are... It's just my perception. I think they're better at this when kids are really little than maybe when the kids start to grow up. And that is kind of maybe whatever we see on television or just out in nature or whatever, making sure we mention God connected with it.
Right.
I think when kids are really little, we're good about that. Look at that rainbow that God made, honey, you know, or you know, oh, they shouldn't, you know, something happens on TV, they shouldn't have said that, you know, because mm-hmm. we're good about that when kids are 3 and 4. For some reason, kids 10, we don't talk about that anymore.
I think we get embarrassed.
Still, and it's still good to say, man, that starry sky is one. Oh, don't we have a great God? And it may be a little hokey to those kids, but it reminds them God is everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, that didn't change because I turned 8 years old.
And I think once our kids get older, they are really good at making you feel silly and mm-hmm. dumb and stupid.
Well, and we're tired of doing stuff like that after a while, frankly.
You are, but a lot of times though, it just feels like they look at you and act like you're getting on their nerves. I mean, that can happen, and that lasts for lasts for a long time. I hate to tell you, but
speaking of, let's go to teenagers. let's go. But you know, they're kind of at that age. Mm-hmm. But if they've been going to church, you know, their whole lives to that point, they really do know a pretty good amount of the Bible. But they also are getting to that age where, let's just be honest, they're cynical about some things, and that's okay to a point. They need to be, you know, looking out for the good and the bad. So some of that cynicism is not all negative. But what do we need to make sure of as parents of teenagers that where we're not undercutting, devaluing that message they're hearing at church?
I think, besides some of the same things that would apply that we've already mentioned, just discussing things with them at home that are spiritual, it could be that you dig a little deeper at that age, mm-hmm. from even what their Bible classes are doing. Mm-hmm. If you really think, you know, if I know that you've been studying this topic in your teen class, so here's a book, we're going to read through it together, and we're going to discuss
an article
it.
From Apologetics Press or Christian Courier.
You know, or a current event that's happening in the world that they know about, discuss how we can think about that with a spiritual worldview, you know, a godly worldview, things like that, you know, make it seem like whatever I'm learning at church is going to be important to my daily life, would help them see that. I think just a lot of it's just being with your kid and talking with them and just not giving up on that idea of trying to ask them and be creative in ways. And I think at that age, it's really important. And, you know, this is one of those overlapping things too. But at that age, it's really important. If you don't want to devalue the message of church, they need to be more proactive themselves in being involved and start to feel like they really are a vital part of the congregation. And it's not just we all go to church, but they individually start to feel like they are a part. So they, in your life at home, you need to be thinking of ways with them that they can be involved, that they can come up with an idea on their own to do.
Right. And that's something I was going
to
say.
Feel like they're connected, and the message applies to them all the time, not just at church.
In their own area. You know, some kids are not going to be public kids, but they might be really good at, you know, mm-hmm. making food and going to the next door neighbors or down the street to the widows, and that's fine. That's wonderful, you know, teaching those things. You know, one thing I thought of for Tina, this is, again, true across the board, but I think it's super important as the kids get a little bit older, and that is as parents being willing to admit when we mess this up and let them see real repentance.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, we really did mess up by watching that movie. That was wrong. And we're not going to watch that movie again. And yeah. Here's why. God says this is wrong. And your kid's going to be a little bit cynical about that. You know, well, if daddy can mess up, I can at first. But if they see we didn't watch that movie again, they're going to notice the change too over mm-hmm. time. And I think especially as kids get older, they'd be willing to see where, you know, yep, you know, we said we were going to do family devotionals every night on our vacation, and we got to the fifth night and hadn't done any. You know what, honey? That's daddy's fault. That's right. Daddy's fault. And next time we go on vacation and we promise that, I want you to tell daddy when it's 9 o'clock at night. We're doing our devotionals, daddy. You said we were. Okay. You know, because daddy messed up. Mm-hmm. And I think they need to be willing to see that's part of Christianity too, is we're not going to get it perfect, but we're not going to stick with what we're doing that's wrong or you know, or not do what's right, because that devalues the message. Because how often at church we talk about we need to repent, we need to change, but for some reason we don't just because we're at home. But they need to see that, yeah, we're going to mess up, but we're going to do better.
I think overall it's just a matter of having, when we say we're Christians and we're going to go through the motion, so to speak, of going to church and doing all those things on Sunday or Wednesday nights or whatever, we better make sure that that has changed our life somehow, mm-hmm. that we don't look like the people around us much at all. And if we are, you know, if our kids are doing everything all the other kids are doing, then we've got an issue with our Christianity.
That's right. So, want to raise a secular kid? Hope you don't. But if you do, go to church. Listen to the message, amen all the prayers, and then come home and live a different life and devalue the message, and your kids will pick up on it, no time flat. Anything else we need to say on this, Miss NFL prediction superstar?
No.
All right. We plan to be back with you in 2 weeks with part 3 of this little mini-series. We hope you're learning. We know these are kind of negative topics. We hope you see we're trying to turn them positive at the end and remind all of us as parents that we can do this and that we are trying to, you know, encourage to raise children who are not perfect but faithful and that love God. But that starts with us as parents, you know, doing the best we can to love God and be faithful and consistent in everything that we do. We're not really perfect. We're going to just do our best. So, Leah, I love you.
Love you.
And until next time, remember, your family can go to heaven. Just make sure you go there together.